So this was in the summer of 1942 when you were working as a supervisor of the tailor shop that Lovchenko had hired you for.
Yeah, yeah.
So go ahead with your story.
There were a group of Ukrainians, tailors like...
Jews?
No, not Jews. Real Ukrainian.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the time of the battle in Stalingrad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we didn't have direct news. We heard through third party the news, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have any radio there or something. That Stalingrad was going to fall any minute. So those Ukrainian, how many there were, I don't know, 6 or 8 or 10 people, got dressed in the better clothes they had,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't come to work. They were, how do you say, fired a holiday that Stalingrad was full to the Germans.
Well, they were against?
Sure, the Ukrainians. They didn't talk too much about the war, but when this happened, there were rumors that Stalingrad is fallen, gonna fall already.
Mm-hmm.
So they got dressed, they had very nice clothes with the tie, and they just walked around, didn't come to work.
Mm-hmm.
The guards didn't do nothing to them, because everybody was confused.
Mm-hmm.
One Ukrainian, I remember his face, I don't remember his name, he said to us, Jewish, you're going to hang in those trees.
Mm-hmm.
You hear that?
Yeah.
And imagine how scared it was for us. We couldn't say, whatever he said, we couldn't say anything. When the Soviets start chasing back the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
We heard about later on, I don't know how many days after this was, and they were certain that the Germans is chasing, they chase them back, the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
One day, we didn't know nothing about. All those Ukrainians disappeared.
Is that right?
True. And nobody knows where, what happened to them. They mm-hmm. were shot like dogs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So that was the winter of 41 to 42. I must have the dates off. Okay. Then summer of 42, you became a travel agent for the railroad. And your role was to negotiate or sign or?
No, well, they sent me with orders.
To do what?
To order, like, what do you call that, travel agent. They sent me with all kind of paperwork,
uh-huh.
Like delivering.
Okay, mostly delivering paperwork. And getting signatures. Then there is here story with KGB agent. And this was where, what town, that KGB agent?
Knyaz Pogost. There were, it was right, that building from the KGB was right next to the office from the railroad.
Across the street from the railroad. Okay. So after that, you left. Oh, tell me the end of it. The end of it was that at some point in time, you were told that all of the Poles would be...
The Polish citizens.
All Polish citizens. Had to be transferred.
To the south. The reason was to a better climate.
To the south. But why, who cared whether they were in a better climate?
This was the order from the with the Allies, I don't know, I mean.
Okay.
And this was the reason, because they could, they don't have any reason for themselves to send us there. They could keep us here.
Okay.
We worked to that here, whatever we did, you know. That is
so. You were transferred to the south. So you took the train.
Not I took the train. They put us in a train.
Yeah.
In a special cattle train.
Special cattle wagons heading south. To where did you go?
Well, we passed major cities. Russians, where they were completely destroyed, like Voronezh.
Oh, you
battle.
Went completely this. Oh,
yes.
That's very interesting.
Because the Germans were there. Stalingrad didn't took. But Voronezh was taken. Then we went more south, Rostov.
Voronezh. Rostov?
Yeah, Rostov.
Mm-hmm.
And then to Krasnodar.
So this must have been the summer of, well, either the fall of 42 or
summer
of 43.
I would say so.
Okay, so I was right. This was the summer of 43.
Because 43, then I was about 2.5-3 years in Krasnodar, and then 46 I went to Poland.
Okay, so you ended up at Krasnodar.
Ended up in Krasnodar.
And what did you do there? What happened when you got off the train?
Well, the first stop was a little farther than Krasnodar. They call it Krymskaya, as a completely destroyed conserve factory.
Conserve?
You know, the cans.
Okay, canning factory.
Can factory, okay. Where they made all kind of tomato sauce and...
Mm-hmm.
All kind of like a Campbell soup, you know.
Okay.
But this was completely destroyed. So some they left and other small towns. I went to that Krymskaya, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was supposed to be the biggest manufacturing of cans in all United of Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And the Russians pulled out all the machinery because the Germans approached, and when the Germans took it all, took over the Krymskaya, Krasnodar, so the Germans destroyed all what do you call it?
The infrastructure.
The building, yeah. It was only broken bricks there. So when I arrived there, they put us to work to clean those broken bricks, you know, and they start rebuilding very slow. And the first thing I remember, they made tomato sauce.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't give us any soap, any clothes to work, and all the things that I had, I, you know, sitting in with the hammock, hitting the bricks. It was no job for me. The clothes I ripped, you know, it was not good condition. I was better off in the north, in the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, I went to Krasnodar, where all of my friends wind up in Krasnodar, and they worked already in a tailor shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there. There was, I had good friends, and the tailor shop belonged to the KGB. They worked only for the KGB. So they had a lot of push,
mm-hmm.
my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to one of them and said that we have a good tailor, one of the best. That they need me to work there. So the secretary of party, Yegorov, write a letter that immediately to release me from the work there with the broken factory.
What is the name of that guy?
Yegorov. The secretary of the Communist Party in Krasnodar.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought that letter to the office where I used to belong there, and I showed it to them. They looked at each other and they had to release me.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was the top secretary of the party.
Mm-hmm.
And they released me. And I went to Krasnodar and I started working, but not in the tailor shop.
Mm-hmm. What?
I like to work in a bakery.
Okay.
And there I worked till the end, till I went home in 46.
So for 3 years you were there?
I didn't work too hard, but I had good food.
They allowed him to get decent food. Okay, and you were only doing bakery job?
Yeah, but I wasn't a baker. I worked there as all kind of work.
Okay, and where did you live there?
As a boarder in with a family. A room.
Okay. Anything that you can recall from that period?
No, I lived a normal life, enjoyed life there.
Mm-hmm.
That area was opposite, different from the north.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here was, I used to go on the road, and they were growing grapes, wild. Oh, that was a different life. Food and everything was different. Okay. It was a different, like in a different country.
Mm-hmm. This was, it's still, it is in Russia. It's not in Georgia. Or
No. This is Russia.
Russia. Okay.
They call it Kuban.
Kuban?
Kuban. Or Krasnodarsky Krai. Mm-hmm. It's near Baku.
Okay. And there, if you spend 3 years, What kind of friends did you make? What kind of relationship did you have?
Oh, we had all our friends.
In other words, was there any Visegruder there?
Visegruder, no. But from the camp. You know, we built a new relationship from the camp. There was that David Gruder, that Moshe Grozanowski, this was Arn Meldin, good friends.
Give me the second name, Moshinovsky.
Moshe Grozanowski.
Okay.
And, a whole bunch, but not Visegrad, no.
Friends from the time of the Gulag?
Oh, they were all from the Gulag, yeah. We were like relatives, you understand, from the Gulag. Then I had other friends, like I was very friendly with Armenian people.
Mm-hmm.
Because that area were a lot from Armenia came in. And there was massacres in Romania, in Armenia, with the Turks, you know.
Yeah.
And the Armenian, I used to do
Azerbaijani and Armenian.
I used to do business with them.
Mm-hmm.
What business? Buying, selling, you know, on the market. And you could trust them more than anybody else. Very honest people in business and everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other, what did you guys do for entertainment? Was there girls?
There was a park.
Mm-hmm.
And every evening were the music, we used to go dancing with the young ladies. We enjoyed life, not knowing yet what's going on in Poland. Then, there in that city, Krasnodar, was all over were Polish citizens, Polish Patriot Organization, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Moscow. Well, Esther was where she was. She was the secretary there.
Mm-hmm.
In Moscow was the center from all of those
social organizations.
Yeah. And we used to meet there almost every evening in that, they call it, they were... if somebody had a problem, a question, or something, there were from our people, lawyers, doctors, they were there.
And through that organization, you tried to get news from what was happening in Poland?
They were with the center from Moscow. But we had more news from wounded soldiers, Russians, who came back from the front, wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, across the street where I used to work in that bakery, an officer, somehow I got to know him, he was walking with a crutch and a hand bandaged. He showed me, he came back from Poland. Poland was already free, they were already in Germany.
That was 45.
Yeah. He brought me a new, showed me a Polish newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed me in the Polish newspaper a picture from a crematorium. I'll never forget that picture, the first one from the crematorium from Auschwitz.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading that article with the picture from Auschwitz. You know, I have to admit that I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I said? This was the Soviet propaganda against the Germans. You know, I know what the Germans meant, but I couldn't believe what he showed me. Because you ever heard of the Katyn massacre?
Katyn massacre, 4,000.
Officially, 10,000 Polish officers got killed?
I think it was 4,000.
Okay. So, who did it?
The Russians.
Oh. But they said the Germans did it.
Of course.
I don't want to be in the German side that the German war angels
did. No. The German did
their
worse
job.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Worse stuff.
But when that Russian officer showed me the picture, you know, the door from the crematorium, and it says there how many they burn bodies a day, I read and I didn't know what to think, but in my mind I had Soviet propaganda. That was in my mind. But later on, when we used to meet in the, what do you call, that Polish organization,
mm-hmm.
we knew more and more about. But nobody could, I remember that nobody wanted
to imagine.
Could imagine or believe
yeah.
that they gave so many people a day and this and that. And to tell you the truth, we went on living there till in 1946 in March, we went again in a train, in a cattle train, taking us back to Poland.
Did you need to get a permit to do that?
No, we were on the list from the Polish organization. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a permission for everybody, a whole group from all over came. You know, and one guy in my train, not in my car, was with a family, I would say my age, jumped off the train. I mean, he didn't jump off, but in a station where we stopped, he ran away. He had a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what everybody was yelling and screaming, what's happening. Their father went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And he met there a girl, and he had was in love, probably. And he ran away from the train. What happened after? I don't know. But those things, you know.
Of course they happen. It happened with my father.
Matter of fact, in Krasnodar was a guy from Poland, from our mm-hmm. people. He was a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
He married a Russian girl. He had a child. And he came to that organization and everything else. And he stayed there. He didn't go back to Poland. He said, I have a family now. You see, a different situation.
Mm-hmm. But he had a wife before in Poland?
No, that guy, no.
Okay.
That friend of mine, David, had a wife already. And that Moshe Krasnovsky had also a wife and a kid. But nobody survived.
Okay. So what about that train ride? Back to Poland. That must have been a long ride.
I think 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we came into Poland, we heard right away they're killing Jews again, the Poles. And we went through, I remember, Krakow, Lwów first, then Krakow.
Hold on a minute. Now, the reason for the killing was because they didn't want the Jews to get back their property.
Because we didn't talk about property yet. They didn't want the Jews back. First of all, they didn't like the Iraqis now don't want the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
The Poles didn't want the Russians.
Mm-hmm. What about the Jews? The Jews have been there for centuries.
The Polish, in the Polish mind, always was communist is the Jews. All over the Jews were victims.
But wasn't the government in Poland controlled by the Russian?
That's what I'm talking about.
So how could the Poles kill Jews if the government was controlled by the Russian?
But they claim the same thing. The Russians, the Soviet Union, is run by Jews.
But they didn't kill the Russians.
No.
They killed the Jews.
Oh, well, Russians I didn't hear. But Jews was real pogroms.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of the Kielce pogrom?
No.
This was later on, I think, 46, 47 or 48.
No, it could not have been 48, but maybe 46 or 47. Kielce, how do you spell Kielce?
No, Celts.
Oh, Celts.
Celts. There was a kibbutz in Celts. You know what's a kibbutz?
Yes.
And one day the Poles organized themselves,
mm-hmm,
and went with sticks and whatever they had in their hands and attacked that kibbutz. And they killed that time, I think, 43 people.
Oof.
Yeah. That's right. And I, when this happened, that Kielce pogrom, you know where I was?
No.
In Visegrad.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard this in the radio, I slept with a family there, a husband, a wife, and a child. You know, in Alex's house, which belongs to Alex's father,
mm-hmm,
his sister used to live.
Okay.
I slept there in the morning, I hear this in the radio, a pogrom in Kielce, killed so many people. I got a little bit, you know, upset and scared, so I took the bus from Visegrad, and I was really scared to travel that time. And I went to Plotsk.
Mm-hmm.
And in Plotsk were, in Visegrad were 5 Jews, but in Plotsk were maybe 100. Not all of them from Plotsk, but they were living there. And I was there when I took back my, you know, the land, the property,
mm-hmm,
because there were the archives.
Mm-hmm.
So when I've been in Plotsk and all we were talking is about the Kielce pogrom.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the train and I went to Lodz.
Mm-hmm.
In Lodz, I was in a kibbutz. And in the kibbutz, I was the, what do you call it? I was in charge of the products. Products,
mm-hmm,
and whoever came in, a new person, I had to register in the police that he,
mm-hmm,
lives with us. And one day, a young man comes up there. And somebody, the leader from the kibbutz, says to me, register this man. He survived the Kielce pogrom.
Mm-hmm.
So I had full respect for him. And he was like 75% blind from beating him over here with things. And the whole face was disformed.
Mm.
And he came out from a hospital and they sent him to that kibbutz because there they liquidate and kills the whole thing. And listen to this, you see, it comes to me gradually, the thing. When I take his name,
mm-hmm,
to register him, and I tell you, I stopped crying. He said, Boris Dorfman.
Mm-hmm.
I said to him, you are Boris Dorfman? You were in the second gulag, I told you before? You know, yes. He said, yes. So I told him who I was, the laundryman. He remembered me. He couldn't see me, but he remembered me. And that's how we became back friendly, friends, in the kibbutz. And he was with us. Well, I didn't treat him special, but he was blind and he became an invalid.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the kibbutz. This was, I think, 47. When he was in kibbutz, I don't know how long, maybe a year or less, they sent him, to transport him to Israel. And Israel was not yet declared as a country.
Mm-hmm.
He wound up in Cyprus. Yeah, was it Cyprus? With the Exodus.
Yeah, Cyprus.
In Cyprus.
Mm-hmm. Oh. But trying to go to Israel.
Trying to go, you know, with the Exodus, they sent him back and they went to Cyprus. They were there. And finally, from Cyprus, they went to Israel. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This was like, I would say, 47 or 48.
Mm-hmm.
In 1952, I go to Israel from Paris for vacation. This was the first time I went by boat, with a Jewish boat. You know what means a Jewish boat?
No.
With a Jewish flag.
Mm-hmm.
And they were dancing the Hora with the Hava Nagida like it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the crew on the ship was the first crew on the ship. There was the name of the ship Negba. That ship was an Italian fishing ship. Did over to a ship for Israel, a passenger ship.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no cabins, you know. It was just two big rooms, one room for a woman, one. It was slept in hammocks.
Mm-hmm.
It was so primitive. It wasn't a passenger ship. It was just a fishing ship which they bought from the Italian. There was a Kedma and a Negba, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
We in one way went with the Kedma, then with the Negba back to Marseille. And this was a very, you know, lively trip. Dancing.
How long were you in Israel?
That time, 7 weeks. We went for a month.
Mm-hmm.
But in this 1952.
And you met some people there?
Sure. Wherever we went, Misha, we met people from Russia, from kibbutz. I met people, you wouldn't believe that, who came to us in the before the war, before 1939, for that Somme colony and from the Zionist organization. I was someplace and they heard my name. I said, aren't you from there? Wasn't your mother's name so-and-so? Imagine that. This is one thing. Then I met in the bus. I met guys from the kibbutz. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I walked over and I said, you know, shalom, and I start talking. You understand? So happy times.
Mm-hmm.
I Esther's brother Moshe lived in Jaffa, out of Tel Aviv, you know, Jaffa. And there is a beach. And there we go on the beach. I see a guy. What was his name? Forgot his name. A young guy, my age. He was a bus driver in Tel Aviv already, and he was at the beach with a girlfriend, Samson or Shimon, I don't remember. Anyway, I met people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then Esther has a relative who's blind from the Second World War. He was a Russian soldier. He came to Israel from Russia to Germany, from Germany to Israel. in 1952, and at that time when we were in Israel, we go to see the family, because Esther knew them, and I met them in a lodge when they came from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
I met that blind guy, because I was in gulag with a brother of his, the oldest mm-hmm. brother. So we knew each other. So I met this guy, the blind guy, Esther's relative not in Tel Aviv, in Yazur, because I said to him, Moshe is his name, Moshe, I have a blind friend here, his name is Boris Dorfman, that guy from
mm-hmm.
the kibbutz.
Mm-hmm.
Could you find him? He said to me, if I'm blind, you think I couldn't find him? It took 3 minutes to find him. 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
He called the headquarters from the blind people.
Did you meet him?
Whom?
Boris?
No.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it was tragic, the whole story. He didn't want to see me.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what are you going to see me? You're going to feel sorry for me? You hear me?
Mm-hmm.
He had something, you know, when he came to Israel, because he's blind,
mm-hmm.
he had a privilege to get a grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Each Jew wanted to have a grocery store, but the government gave you the right to have a grocery
mm-hmm.
store. That blind Esther's relative
mm-hmm.
got also a grocery store in Yazur. He
mm-hmm.
couldn't run it. He was completely blind and no arm, but the parents run the store for him,
mm-hmm.
so they could make an easy living, because, you know, people can't live in.
Sure.
And that blind Boris Dorfman they gave him also a store, a makolet, they call it. I forgot which town, near Tel Aviv.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked on the phone. In the beginning, he didn't want to talk to me. He was something depressed.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, I didn't press the issue. I want to see you. You have to see me, you know. I'm not his brother. I mean,
sure.
So he talked to me very friendly, very thing, but better you don't see me. He had a bad experience with a woman, something he took in, or he wanted to marry her maybe. She took advantage because she
mm-hmm.
had the store. I don't know. I heard from somebody else. There were a few guys which from the kibbutz heard about him.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah.
So I didn't see him. And okay. I want to see him.
It happens.
Yeah. Now I don't know. You want to go?
I'll go now.
Moshe, go.
So download the stuff that we... and come back tomorrow morning.
You're going to give me a call when